So you're emphasizing repetition as being a part of it. And many of the changes that we see occurring in the brain, some of them are quick, but many of them that are, we believe, are significant, take a long time for these to occur. And you know, what is it that's affecting the rate at which maturation occurs or integration occurs? What is the role in your training of repetition of the same process over and over again? What effect is that? How do you perceive of that?
I think repetition seems too mechanical. I would say more perseverance. Perseverance, because it's never the same. You know, if you try to meditate on compassion or something or visualization, it's not going to happen in the same way. It's more like a pianist who does again and play again and again the same piece of music. It's repetition, but it's never the same because it's acquiring more skill. So it's basically training, and actually, as we know, the better word for meditation would be familiarization. Familiarization with the new way of being in that case. And that takes work, and that takes time, but that time is an accumulation of persevering in the application of the practice. So it seems repetitious because you will sit again and again trying to go to the same sort of type of meditation. So from that perspective, you're not going to see different movies every day or changing, you know, driving throughout the land and seeing a new landscape every day. But somehow you again and again refine that exercise. So it seems repetitious. But in fact, we are just acquiring a skill in the same way that neurogenesis takes time. And that skill is about becoming a better human being or dealing with afflictive emotions or confusion, wrong perception of reality, and so forth.
There's a crucial thing that runs through a lot of Buddhist meditation, and that is the basic premise of Buddhism is that we suffer mentally especially, because we are misapprehending reality. And so in order to counteract the misapprehension, we need to come to know reality as it is, to gain some realization into certain facets of reality. But a crucial point is it's not sufficient, I don't think it's ever sufficient, to gain a realization and kind of some direct insight just once. That it's almost like the formation of one neuron, only metaphorically. It's like the initial birth of a neuron, but so what? Okay. You realize it, but then you must realize it again. It's through and repeated, and so it goes from in Tibetan topa to ding topa. Topa is realization. It's authentic. You got it. But if you don't come back to the well and keep on coming back and back and back, it doesn't bring about that radical transformation and completely eradicate the delusion that is completely incompatible with the actual realization. So dingtopa means gaining confidence. That's where, so to speak, that realization has completely embedded itself. The dendrites have completely connected. And so now you're actually seeing reality differently, and the previous delusion is now gone, supplanted by a clearer vision of what's going on.
It's kind of integration. I do like an image, which is the momentary realization. Sort of you see the right thing, but you don't see it enough. So it's like mist in the morning. It will dissipate. Mm-hmm. When the stable realization is like the blue sky, it never changes.
One important implication of this work or area where there's a connection to some of the material that Rusty presented in the morning is around the issue of novelty. And Rusty talked about the role of the hippocampus as a novelty detector. From one perspective, a naive person might think, in response to your description, Mathieu, that repeating something over and over again will be just the opposite. It will make things less and less novel if you're repeating it over and over again. And yet, there seems to be a quality that's cultivated of freshness, which is really the ability to see the same thing in novel ways each time. And I wonder if you can say something.
Sheva tamda, because feeling sushmuyat. So it's not just a matter of repetition, because if it's a mere issue of repetition, then it'll be like, you know, watching the same film over and over again. You get bored at a certain point. Mm-hmm. But so in the Buddhist language, when we speak of how understanding translates into some kind of action or transformation, we speak in terms of different stages of understanding or levels of understanding. The first level of understanding is referred to as the understanding derived through learning or a study or whatever. So it's the initial intellectual understanding you gain.
Quite conceptual.
And then the second level of understanding is understanding derived through reflection. So where it's not just an intellectual understanding, but you constantly sort of, you know, familiarize with it and then internalize it, and then you get to a point where it becomes almost like kind of a... it arises with a sense of conviction. Mm-hmm. And then the third level of understanding, which is the culmination, is referred to as the understanding derived through meditation, where the understanding has now really become integrated into your very person. So what we see here is a kind of a progressively higher levels of a kind of what could be almost referred to as feeling component or effective component, you know, associated with the knowledge. So there might be something sort of analogous to the process in which medication works to counter
even
a disease
on the physical level.
If I can add, this is, I think His Holiness specifically really referring to the type of medication you get in traditional Tibetan medicine, where these are organic substances. They're not designed to give you one knockout punch, like the Cipro that I took last night. these are pills that you may take over a period of weeks, months, or even a year or longer. And so even though it's the same medication, it has a cumulative effect, and the transformation is ongoing. And that's how very commonly Tibetan medicine is dispensed. Mm-hmm. Unlike pharmaceutical drugs, you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And they're not designed just to suppress a symptom. There are two very interesting approaches here. So many is maybe I can start. You can finish the last part. So please do feel free to correct. But there are two approaches here. And one is the approach that the Buddhists really praise and urge, and that is an approach of investigation. So you start with hearing, learning new material, and acquiring, gaining conceptual understanding of it, but then investigating, reflecting upon it, putting it to the empirical test, any way you can investigate it. And then slowly, 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 through this ongoing kind of honest approach that has integrity for really true investigation, then coming to some fresh insight, and it's called pramana, which is defined as a fresh, non-deceptive, authentic recognition of something, but it's fresh. But from that comes this ascertainment, a total conviction that you've nailed it, right? And so that's an authentic approach. So you earn it the hard way by true investigation. There's another one's almost like a parody of that, or a facsimile of that, where it's basically dogma-driven. You get it from an authority, and you get it purely based on belief. You're told this is the way it is because it's in such and such a scripture or an authority, and you may indoctrinate yourself in that, and so basically brainwash yourself into it, that as Stupa Jimbo is saying, you may come to a great point of certainty. You're absolutely convinced that you're right, but you didn't earn it the hard way. You just got it by sheer blind authority. And I think I had to sense His Holiness is parsing out there's a difference in that type of conviction. Mm. One is just like sheer almost willpower or acceptance of authority, and the other one is really based upon reason and investigation. But then there was a final point, as Sonia raised.